Record button and we're ready. Okay, welcome everyone to the ARIES working group call. Today in the agenda we have a virtual credential topic, which is very high level presentation about the virtual credential data model, a virtual data registry, and a revocation mechanism. And that will be accompanied with the carry example or carry proof of concept, how you can use the virtual credential with a slightly different way from the perspective of the ledgerless approach. So obviously, reminder for everyone that the call is recorded. The recording will be posted at the end of the call on the meeting page. Obviously, reminder about the antitrust policy. We have attendees list where you can put your name and the email if you want to leave the trace for everyone who would like to find you. I will try to, where is chat? I will put the link in the chat. And I see a couple of new names on the chat, on the list of the participants. Maybe if anyone would like to introduce himself to this community and say a few words, who you are, what you do, and where you're interested in the ARIES. Anyone?
Sure, I can try to give a go. So my name is Luis. I'm from Portugal. I work at a company called Genesis Studio that is looking into identity use cases, of course, using blockchain typically. And we're quite interested in understanding better how ARIES could support multiple ledgers, not only Indy at this point, but others as well. Upon other issues that, of course, we understand could be very interesting in this space. But that's one of the main concerns.
Thank you very much. Welcome on the call.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Good. If no one else, then obviously feel free to introduce yourself on the chat if you prefer that way, or leave the message on the meeting page and we will move on. Announcements. Obviously, the reminder about IIW. Really recommend for everyone who never been, very interesting space, a very interesting atmosphere. Obviously, topics related with identity in a very, very broad spectrum. It is happening 22nd April, so more than a month from now. Any other announcements? I think we need to clean that up.
This is the on week for the ARIES Bifold meeting. It's every other week, and it's this week, just before the ARIES B call. And that again is a group collaborating around a React Native code base for a mobile app. Hey,
Andrew. Thank you, Sam. Any other announcements?
So announcements, not necessarily, but related calls. This is the on week for the Identity Implementers Working Group call, which is tomorrow, the hour after this one. And in that call, I like to go over a lot of the different happenings from a variety of working groups so that everyone's aware of what's going on in the different projects. And then also I've been exploring different ways of making native language wrappers over Rust libraries. And there's an open source project that I've come across that I'd like to kind of present and discuss, show a couple of examples. And so that will be on tomorrow's call. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. So one announcement from my side. On 23rd, I believe, there is a held working group call in SEN, so European Standardization Committee, on which they will decide if they will create a dedicated working group for digital identity. That will be part of the blockchain and blockchain technologies working group. The interesting part about that one, for those who are not familiar with the European Standardization Committee, is that this is some, let's say, a public body which basically defines the standards and trying to recommend solutions or specific architectures within the European Union. So basically, whatever standards they will recommend, that will be something which most countries, European countries, will try to apply within their national jurisdictions. And the reason why I'm mentioning about that is that obviously, from the perspective of what those guys are doing, we as a Human Colossus Foundation, we're trying to educate them about this, what is happening specifically in the Hyperledger ecosystem, in the Trust over IP, and as well from the perspective of the Decentralized Identity Foundation, where the development of the carry and the kind of blockchain-less approach is developed for the specifically for identity, but as well, obviously, the blockchain as a whole, it has a much more much bigger scope. Taking into consideration as well data exchange and so on. Good. So any other related calls which anybody would like to provide to the community?
On the B call this afternoon, we will be continuing. I hope this is the last discussion of AIP2. We are very close to be able to lock that down. So excited about that.
Perfect. Good. So from my side, ACDC, Authentic Chain Data Containers, this moves very slowly, but we already finalized the use cases. And right now we'll evaluate the specification and try to start writing down the specific recommendation for the protocols and the structures of that beast. The input and semantic that last time we didn't had one, but on this one, on today call input domain, there will be a discussions about a difference between addresses versus identifiers, which is quite often mixed together. And we'll talk a little bit about that, why we need to keep it separate and what it means for example, SSI or any type of digital identity, which is currently, or with which people are working with. Good. Any other updates from the related calls? Good. Let's move on to the release statuses and the work updates. Do we have anyone would like to share any important stuff with the community? Good. Then let's move on to the main topic. So I wanted to present to you guys what we are working on and as well a high level topic of virtual credential data model, which is in many cases very obvious for everyone, how that works and why and what's the reasoning behind the technology which we are building. But actually, there are some nuances and very important aspects which I would like to address today. since we came across those when we started building some specific solutions. So obviously from the perspective of the Verifol credential, and this is very specific, Verifol credential is very specific implementation of something which we call authentic data. So you can think of it that this is any type of the container, including any data, if it's something related with identity or if something related with authorization or any type of claims or whatever, it could be just simply a huge container with the data records, which is, for example, your medical records, which you are transporting. But obviously, the Verifol credential is the most most known use case, and this is something which I wanted to focus on a little bit. So obviously, the tripartite authentic data, so Verifol credential model, which is, I think, known to everyone here on that call. It's a pretty standard one, which is promoted in many places. We have the issuer, holder, and verifier. The issuer issuing a credential to the holder. The holder uses the credential to present it to the verifier, and then the verifier verifies the information. And obviously, from perspective of the SSI, there is a specific data model which includes something which is known as verifiable data registry, so this VDR. And obviously, in many cases, this is a blockchain, but and the reason for that is very simple, is that the model assumes that the issuer issuing credential to the holder should not know whenever the holder will actually use the presentation to the verifier and is not able to correlate too much information about that, what the holder is doing or how often he's using those credentials, right? So it's a purely privacy preserve mechanism to make sure that we can protect the holder. And obviously what is happening is that the verifier goes to VDR for specifically in that case of Verifol credential, I mean, overall trying to resolve the public key of the issuer to verify that the verification, that the credential which was presented by the holder is valid and is truly signed by the issuer. Obviously, there is a necessary to establish a kind of governance framework that the verifier actually trusts that key and this identifier, that this identifier belongs to that specific issuer. This is something which goes on top of it, but overall the mechanism is very simple. Issuer is doing a registration of his identifier in the VDR, and through that VDR, the verifier can discover the authoritative key, which is linked to a specific DID mentioned in the Verifol credential. So that's very known aspect or very known data model which is used across. And just a reminder for those who are new maybe to Aries, Aries assumes that the VDR, obviously it's something which is very generic, means that obviously currently most of the implementation are focusing on the indie ecosystem, but obviously by design, we would like to make sure that Aries can support any type of VDR. Blockchain-based, non-blockchain-based, maybe more or less centralized or less centralized. Basically, it should not matter. It obviously depends on the use case which you are implementing, but this component is pluggable, and you can exchange the drivers to any VDR which you would like to support. So back to our data models. So obviously, the VDR is a kind of default in the SSI space. But as you know, in many existing ecosystems, that works slightly different. And obviously, the tripartite data model without the VDR is very simple in the sense that the verifier goes always back to the issuer asking if the credential is actually valid. And this is one of the most known verification method right now, where we have actually a centralized ecosystem somewhere where the issuer controls it, issuing a credential, giving it to the holder, and whoever wants to verify it, it always goes back to the issuer and asking, did you issue that? So obviously the revocation mechanism and handling the credential is relatively simple, right? Because the issuer have a full control over that, and each time when the verifier wants to check, it goes to the issuer. And obviously this introduced a concern about the privacy, because obviously the issuer knows each time when someone verify the credential that this kind of activity was performed by the holder. So obviously this is not something which can be applied in many use cases. But then we have a different data models. Like one of them is bipartite model, where actually the issuer is actually the verifier, right? So this is a very simple one model where the issuer issuing a credential to the holder. And whenever the holder is using a credential, it's always using in the context of the issuer. You could imagine that scenario in the enterprise where the enterprise issuing an employee a credential to perform a certain authorization for doing something or proving that he's employee and he's able to access, let's say, infrastructure within the enterprise. And the issuer is always the verifier. So they are doing the verification, the presentation directly to the issuer. Then when we go further on, we'll have much more complex models which relies on the delegation. And here we have this joint delegator service model. So the delegator, in that case, we have a delegator source service. So basically the delegator act as well as a service, and then is able to delegate a credential across the chain. So you can have as many hops here as you like. You're doing authorization through those to the different, let's say, departments, people in the department, and so on. And then each time when one of those delegatee is willing to use a credential within the delegator space, it goes back and obviously provide a presentation, and the delegator is able to verify that immediately, because he doesn't need to reach any other source of the information. He's the source of the information. In many cases within this joint delegator service model, the service and the delegator is decoupled. Means that you have a delegator who actually issuing credential, then obviously you have a chain of delegated credentials with a different authorization. And then the service is completely outside of the infrastructure of the delegator. In that case, obviously we get back to the verification back to the delegator source to verify that the keys and the identifier and the keys are matching, and that we can verify correctness or authenticity of the credential. Yet again, this is very similar to the previous case, where we always need to go back to the source, and the source obviously is informed about usage of the credential. So in some cases will be quite not desired to expose this kind of privacy. And obviously when we'll mix those models together, there is something which comes up, and it's called open loop split model. And by the way, I forgot to mention at the beginning, those data models and the work which was done here, credit goes to Sam Smith, who actually prepared that and explained to me that over different discussions. And I use his work, which I, at the end of the slides, there is a link to his original work, which is part of the Carey explanation, how it works and the different data models. So that's all the credit goes to him in the context of that work. But back to the topic. So open loop split model. So the delegator source, we have the chain of the delegatees. We have a service, which is basically receiving the presentation. And then to do the verification, it goes to the Verhold data registry. And obviously the delegator needs to do the registration, the VDR, to provide a link between the identifier and the public key, so it is available to everyone else. And obviously the reason why we have a VDR is, as I mentioned, it's because of the privacy and making it much more privacy preserved from the perspective of the holder. But obviously, taking that into consideration, the delegator cannot do the correlation in the context of use credentials by one delegatee or one holder. But obviously, those correlation mechanisms can be applied in the VDR. It means that depending on what staff you have here, you could do you could learn about how often one credential is used, how often someone is asking for a specific public key. So obviously, it's maybe not so easy to link those objects, but still some correlation methods are available in the VDR. So implementation of those VDRs and governance of those VDRs is as well very important from the perspective how it is handled. So now to the point. So obviously here I wanted to show you a slightly different approach to the VDRs, which is proposed by Kerry architecture, and how that compares to the shared ledgers VDRs, which we know from, for example, in the ecosystem as a blockchain, providing those functionality. So obviously, from the perspective of the DIT methods, which we had, most of them are using shared ledger, right? So it's a blockchain, it's a decentralized technology, which allows you to build a different types of the governance around those nodes and decide how you want to run it. The VDR, it's then publicly available for whoever wants to interact with it. Or you can build up as well something which is within the consortium or within the enterprise, which is available only as a private VDR for specific use cases. So obviously, from the perspective of the DIT space, DIT methods, if you are interacting between DIT methods, the assumption is that one specific DIT method is using one VDR, the same VDR. It means that you cannot have a DIT method which one is connected to Indy technology, but let's say it will be Findy, and another one will be connected to a sovereign network. You can't have the same namespace because then you are not able to figure it out to which VDR you need to go to actually find out the public key. So this is why there is work done within the Hyperledger ecosystem to figure it out how to do the interoperability between the DIT methods to address the different types of the networks, even though that they are based on the same technology, but figure it out how to do interop between them across the different ledgers, across the different shared VDRs. And as you know, I mean, we have over 80, or I think it's even reached 90 already DIT methods in the DIT registry. So obviously not all of them are super interesting from the perspective of a production system, but there is a lot and probably a lot of them will be created still, because it seems that tendency is that each organization or each kind of projects is trying to came up with their own DIT methods just because they want to have one for their specific use case. So this is very challenging from the perspective of the whole ecosystem. So it would be very nice to have a solution for that, how to make that much more streamlined and find out how to make sure that everyone will use the same protocols in the same kind of infrastructure, even though that they have a slightly different use cases. So Kerry suggests something which is a VDR, which is a ledger independent. What it means is that it doesn't even need a ledger to make it work. You could lock it to a specific ledger, but it's not necessary. And the reason for that is that the Kerry provides you something which is called key event log, which you can think of like kind of micro ledger. It's like a blockchain with one node which you fully control. And the reason for that is that when you think about identity is not something which is which requires a global ordering mechanism. Means that my identity is completely decoupled from your identity. I can use it independently. I don't need to use exactly the same network, infrastructure, tooling, or whatever. It's completely decentralized by nature, right? And Kerry used those assumptions to create those micro ledgers for each individual identifier, which is called autonomic identifier, because it's self-certifying, it's self-managing. There is no ledger network or anything which helps to manage that identifier. And obviously, when we are talking about identifier, we means the basically mapping from identifier to the public-private keys. That's the magic. That's the secret sauce of the whole DID space or Kerry itself, which suggests to do it slightly different. So instead of going to one specific ledger asking, okay, what is the public key linked with that specific identifier? I just need to figure it out, where is the key event log? And from the key event log, I can figure it out what is the public key of that specific identifier, which one is the latest one, right? And there is a lot of details into the how the infrastructure works for that and so on. But for now, we'll keep it high level. Obviously, everything here, we have a cryptographically verifiable a proof of the current set of the authoritative keys of the identifier. So we know always which one is the latest one, right? And we can figure it out that juice from knowing the key event log. And it doesn't matter from where you will get it, because cryptographically you can verify that its correctness. So that gives you some very nice characteristics from the perspective of that, what kind of infrastructure you want to use. Because even if you are using like DHT, so distributed hash tables, there is a limitation of that, what kind of security measures you need to apply to that, because it doesn't matter from where you will get it, if it will be even from a malicious node in the network, you can always verify the correctness of that key event log. It means that they cannot tamper the key event log. They can't modify. They can't add anything. They can't do anything with that. The only thing which they could do is to do not provide you the key event log, or do some kind of DOS attack or things like that, but basically they will you will not be able to retrieve the event log. But even if but as soon as you are able to get a copy of that, you are able to cryptographically verify on your own the correctness of those all those objects. So taking that into consideration, I wanted to show you our proof of concept which we built. The code is available under this Git repository. It's a very simple one, but I will guide you through what we did and what's going on. And then we'll get to the interesting part of that talk. So I hope you can see the terminal. Just tell me if the font is not too small or anything like that. Is that readable?
You do shift plus,
yeah,
for one. Well, that's funny. Yeah, thanks.
No problem. So what I have here. So what we did is that we used the Kerryox, so Rust implementation of Kerry, did the binding to Python. And the reason why we did the binding to Python is that we want to use it in the AKPI agent, so we can introduce this new plugin for VDR specifically for Kerry, and here we are showing how that works. So here in that demo, this what we can do is to start the issuer. What is happening is that obviously issuer generating the DID. In that case, we have Kerry namespace here to give you the idea how that is represented. So obviously, that's the prefix of the carry. And we have a VC. In that case, we just took a very simple example in a sense that you can throw anything, it will be signed, and anything can be passed to someone and he can verify it. So obviously it could be a verified credential data model from the W3C or any other kind of credential which you can think of, or any authorization mechanism or any kind of payload which you would like to do the same way. So here we have a very simple structure. We have basically issuer, that's me, and we have some message inside, and then we have a signature of that message using the private key of the issuer. So now we have, let's get the holder. So as a holder, by running the holder script, obviously we have the DID of the holder. I'm communicating, this is going, running over TCP and is just, you know, connecting to the local host, to the issuer, asking for receiving the credential. I'm getting the credential, basically the credential is issued as I'm asking for it. And then obviously we have the communication with the issuer. We got the key event log, so we know which is the current key and what type of the key, what type of the event it is. So you need to know that in Keri there is a different types of the events. One of them is inception. Inception is basically establishing one of the first event that you're creating the identifier. You're creating it with those public-private keys, and you're basically stating that this is a new identifier, and this is the current one, right? So basically, what we're doing with the script is that out of the key event log, which we are getting from the issuer, we are creating a DID document. Oops, and it's very simple. Just an example to show how you can generate the DID document out of the key event log, so you can map it to this DID spec and let's say DID ways of doing it, right? So you have a DID, which is this one. You have a DID doc, which is automatically generated. It's not fetched from the issuer. It's automatically generated from the CEL. So you can verify cryptographically that the CEL is correct. Then you generate the DID, and then basically this is from where you have the public key, which you can use the verification method specifically for the credential which was issued here. And obviously in that case, the signature is verified, so everything matched the key and everything is fine, right? Now this, what I have here is a simple netcat command, which is sending the command to the issuer to rotate the key, right? So this what will happen now is that the issuer rotating the key. So imagine that the key is compromised, or for whatever reasons, once in a while they are rotating the key. So now the interesting part is happening is that obviously from the perspective of the holder, I want to verify that credential which I received, right? So obviously I got the list of the, so this is a key event log. So as you can see here, there is a type inception. So the one which we use in the first place to create the verbal credential. The second one is the rotation. So the one which we said that, okay, key is compromised, please change the key. And the key is rotated. So the prefix is obviously still the same, but now the key will be different. And obviously we are not able to verify the credential anymore, because the key is not the same. And obviously in that case, the problem which I will show you in a second how we thinking of solving is quite common from the perspective of that, how you manage the keys compared to verbal credential. It means that if you rotate the key, in many cases you need to rotate all the credentials or revoke all the credentials to be able to reissue new credentials with new key, so everything matched correctly. But this is super inefficient way of doing things, because if you imagine that you're an issuer and you have millions of credentials issued, you don't want to revoke them just because the key was compromised, because the credentials are still valid. It's just that the key was compromised means that every new credential which will be generated through the stolen key, those should be invalid, right? So obviously, as I said, the code is on the GitHub. You can look it up how we did that. We created that code for a couple of reasons, but one of them was to start preparing a code to work with the Akapai as a separated VDR, and as well to show people that the Keri getting to the stage where actually you can do something with it. It's not just a pure concept, but it actually has some code behind it, which allows you to do some interesting things. Obviously, there are two implementations of Keras. Actually, there is a couple of more, but I think the most mature one is the Python implementation and the Keriox, so Rust implementation. But there is a Go implementation, Java implementation, and JavaScript as well, developed in parallel. Okay, back to our deck. This one.
Robert, I have a question.
Yeah, sure.
I missed how the carry event was transmitted to the party. So it says on your screen, right? It received a carry event. How is that transmitted?
You mean, okay. So in that case, what is happening is that the holder is just requesting the issuer, please provide me your key event log. Right. So obviously, this is not something which you will do in production. Normally, how this will work in the production is that you have a DID, which you need to have. You need to have a resolution mechanism for the DID to know where to go to get the key event log. Right. So in the carry space, this there is a component called witness, and the witness is basically a third party which monitors a different identifier, public identifier, because we need to mention that direct mode, so peer-to-peer mode, works slightly different than indirect mode, which is the public one, because peer-to-peer is like everything is clear. I'm talking to you, you're talking to me, we know each other, everything is clear. I can provide you the key event log and so on without any problems. But as soon as you're going public and interacting with multiple entities, that goes a little bit complex. So basically, it's just a resolution process which is behind that. In that demo, obviously, it's very simple because I know where to ask. It's an issuer running on my local host, and I get the whole key event log from him. But I could ask any witness within the ecosystem. An ecosystem, I mean, it could be a ledger. I could call a sovereign network and say, hey, guys, give me the key event log for this identifier, right? And then the ledger will return it to me. Or you can have a simple IPFS where you can call this identifier and then ask, please provide me the key event log, the latest one which you are aware of for that identifier, and I can get it. I can get it even from multiple sources and then compare which one is the latest one, because maybe one witness will be malicious and will not provide me the latest version of that key event log. So there is a lot of into it, but I hope that this addresses your question.
Partially. Does a carry, and I realize I'm asking questions across like three different topics right now, but does a carry identifier tell you which witness it's using, or how would you know which witness to ask?
Correct. So when you're creating inception event, right? So what you're encoding in the inception event is that you're providing information, obviously, about the identifier, the prefix and seal of that and so on, the digest. But as well, you have a list of the witnesses which you're delegating as an owner of the identifier where you are publishing your key event log. So you nominate the networks or the witnesses, like overall witnesses which you are using. So it means that you can point that you are using sovereign network and Ethereum network and IPFS. And those three sources are my witnesses, which they are observing my identifier. I can change them, I can rotate them and you know, do a different things. But basically you as a subject, you deciding about that, where to put it.
Excellent. So in the case that you do have witnesses, the identifier tells you where to look and you can go ahead and look there. In the case of a peer situation, it strikes me that having a DIDCOM protocol to request a key event log from a party would be a really useful way to ask for and receive.
Exactly, because I mean, when you're doing it peer-to-peer, then you basically, obviously you do not have a point of reference if this guy is telling you true, because obviously he can send you whatever, you know, he likes. He can, for example, if I'm communicating with you and with another person, I can send two different key event logs to both of you. And if you are not communicating each other, there is no way to detect that I'm telling two different people a different kind of story about my identifier, right? So in the peer-to-peer communication, that's it's basically it relies on that you communicating with the person, and he's not duplicit with you only. And if you want to go beyond that, then obviously you need to go into this indirect mode where you have the infrastructure which allows you to monitor if the guy is not telling you or providing you wrong information, and that he is not compromised in the sense that he's not lying.
Right. Okay.
Okay. So back to the presentation. So obviously, from the perspective of what you saw, I think it's the biggest problem right now. I don't know if, and obviously correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think that any DID methods right now provide a decent solution about how to decouple the identifier and the DID documents with the keys in the context of the issuing of the verifiable credential. It means that if I'm issuing credential and I'm revoking my key, I need to somehow include information about the old key in case if someone wants to verify the credential which was issued with the old key, right? Because each time when you will rotate it, you will go back to the DID document, you ask, give me the public key, you get the latest public key which was not used to issue verifiable credential, and obviously the credential will fail, as you saw on the example which I showed. And from that perspective, it's desire to somehow decouple those two processes means that key event state, so the latest state of the key, the latest state of the identifier, so what is the latest key for that identifier, versus everything which was signed and kind of transaction-based events for that identifier, like verifiable credential, like, you know, doing signatures on something and so on, right? So what Carey proposed is that you have a key event log, which you can think of it like DID document. This is what you saw on the demo, that out of the key event log, I can generate the latest state of the key. I know that the public key, the latest public key for that specific identifier is this one, and that's it. So I can use it for whatever purposes, right? But as soon as you go to the specific registry, right? So specific transactions which were done by this identifier, you need to have a separate log which keep tracks of that what you are doing. So in that context, the transaction event log is the concept which Carey is using to decouple those two things and make it possible to establish cryptographical control over any type of the registry which you would like to create through the key event log. So through the identifier and the public keys, which can change over time, but you can establish a control over that registry. Means that the registry will not accept anything which is not issued by the latest key, which is controlling the identifier, right? So from that perspective, I will jump right away to the specific use case of those verifiable credentials, right? Because obviously, I think this one, not this one, let's go directly here. Registry with the verifiable credential registry, right? So how the key event log can control the verifiable credential registry, and how this works, how that helps to solve the problem which we saw with the latest key, right? So imagine that you have the key state, which obviously over time changes, but each time when you use the key, you generate a transaction which is sealed back to the key, which is used to issue the credential, right? And then obviously you can put here whatever you like. It's a standard registry, which you can, for the verifiable credential purposes, you can use dedicated information to say that I'm issuing that credential. The state of that credential is issued, so it's valid. So whoever will come to verify the credential, he goes to the transaction event log and say, okay, is this credential still valid? I check if the if there is no revoke transaction for that specific virtual credential, and I can go back to the key event log and pick the key which actually was used to issue that credential. And obviously, if you have a revoked transaction, obviously that could be used by or that could be generated by a completely different key, but the flows. You can verify everything cryptographically, that everything belongs or everything is controlled by that specific identifier. And the reason for that is simple, that if you have like we said, a million of those credentials, right? And for whatever reasons, the key will be compromised. It doesn't mean that all the credentials are invalid right now, because the credentials could be still valid depending obviously on the use case. And you don't want to get rid of the possibility to verify those credentials. So you need to provide this linking mechanism back to the old key, and you just rotate the key, because if the key is even compromised, nothing in this transaction registry will be problematical. Only the transactions which will be created by the compromised key, but the virtual credential registry, the transaction event log will not accept anything which is not issued by the latest state of the key. So imagine that number two is compromised. You need to do the rotation. And obviously you have this time frame between the rotation of the key and the time when actually the key was compromised. So if you don't know when it happened, so you have, let's say, a gap of whatever amount of time. And obviously in that time, you need to realize that whatever credentials will be issued in that case, you need to revoke, but you need to revoke only those credentials which were issued by the compromised key in that given point of time. Because if you say that from last week, we are not sure if those credentials were issued by us, we just revoke all of them, but everything else is fine because let's say the attack which was performed was 1 week old, right? And then you rotate the key, and then with this rotated key, you can obviously add a new transactions into the transaction event log and be able to continue issuing credentials without need to revoke credentials in from the past. So that way we are able to propose a simple solution, or simple, maybe it's not as simple or it sounds a little bit confusing, but as soon as you dive into the details, you realize that actually this is relatively simple from the perspective of the flow and provides you a decent solution for handling a huge amount of the virtual credential or any authentic chain data containers without need to have this hassle of figuring out where is the old key, how to, you know, reissue those credentials and so on and so forth. Good, so as I said, the virtual credential data models and most of the stuff which I said is kind of part of the work which is done by Sam. The models and more details about Carry you can find under this link. It's a presentation done by Sam about the Carry, and the code which I showed, obviously the link in the GitHub, the presentation will be attached to the meeting page, so you can get it from there. So that's it from my side. If you have any questions or comments, I'm happy to answer and hear what do you think about that. And obviously I would love to hear if you know about any solution which is out there based on the current DIT methods and the DIT spec for revocation mechanism without, so revocation mechanism for the credential and rotation of the keys without need to reissue all the credential. How this is done currently by different projects, this will be very interesting to hear. Okay, then thank you very much. And yeah, questions?
I will offer that I don't know the current state of the discussion, but I know there has been an ongoing discussion about the difference between a key that was compromised and therefore revoked versus a key that was simply rotated. And I know Daniel Hardman's been at the center of that for the DID core spec And it is possible with, it's not required of DID methods, but it's possible for a DID method to, during resolution, to retrieve a document either with a particular version or at a particular timestamp, right, which would allow you to know what the valid key was for a DID at the time, which the DID method could specify could be used for, you know, verifying credentials issued prior to a rotation without compromise. So there has been discussion of that. There are folks that are adamant that that's not the case, but I think that a reasonable evaluation of it indicates that there are sometimes really good reasons to rotate a key, even though the other one has not yet been compromised. This could be a change of equipment or other sort of general hygiene type things. And so accommodating that is an important aspect of that for an issuer, right? An issuer never being able to under pressure to reissue to their you know, to therefore avoid rotating a key is a good sign that that you know, that's back pressure. Basically, it provides an incentive to not do a good thing, and so that's exactly a necessary solve.
Quite often the companies actually have a policy that every 6 or 12 months they are changing all the keys just in case, because you don't know if there are any keys like, you know, idling somewhere on some equipment, which you know, you have no idea where they were put or used by someone, right? So it's, like you said, it's just a standard hygiene about the security aspects of maintaining the key. So this is definitely something which needs to be supported from the perspective of the methods and the technology which we providing.
Totally. I confess I don't know the current state of that conversation, but I do know that it has been heavily discussed.
I'm aware of the possibility to let's say get the DID document based on a specific let's say timestamp. So in a given point of time, what was the version of the DID document? So you just need to know which timestamp you are interested in. In many cases, you can get it directly from the credential when it was issued, what was at that state, the DID document, and then eventually use that one to retrieve that. But as far as I know, this is very DID method specific. Means that, for example, DID solve could provide that because the ledger provides you possibility to get the different versions of the DID document, but some DID methods could not provide that at all. So there is no generic way of doing that. And this is something which is problematical from the perspective of having those, you know, 90 DID methods and each does it completely differently. And if there will be no consensus about how it should be done, then it will be a huge mess and you know, fragmentation about what is possible on which DID.
I believe the methods are the same, but not all DID method supports it. Meaning the mechanism is the same across them, but not all DID methods allow for it.
Right, yeah. That's a better way to say it. Yeah, sorry. I went too far with that. Yeah. So it's just a question of the supporting that on the method side, if there is actually an old version of the DID document possibly to retrieve from that specific VDR, which is behind the DID method. Mm-hmm. Okay, any other questions or comments? Good. If there is nothing more, then thank you very much for your time. Really appreciate that. And we'll speak each other in 2 weeks.
Thanks, Robert.
Thank you very much.
Have a good one, everyone.
Thanks. Bye.